Good morning. I have to start out with saying what an honor and a privilege it is to be here and how overwhelming the energy of you all as a crowd and a group is. I was in the registration area last night, and all of a sudden people would start, woo, and it would go through the entire crowd like a wave. The energy is really amazing, and it's a privilege to be here. Thank you. I've been told my designated title is that I'm an earth person, and so please forgive me if I do not use the proper language or if I misstep or if I misunderstand any of the AA concepts, because I am not an expert in AA. I am an employee assistance professional. And the work that I do as an employee assistance professional is to help people with all sorts of problems, including alcohol and other kinds of drugs as well. I don't know how many of you may be familiar with employee assistance work, but just as a reminder, or for those of you who don't know, employee assistance actually got started under AA. It was in the 70s and 60s, and it was people in recovery on the floor of the factory helping other people who they knew had a drinking problem. And that was how AA got, or how EAP got its start. And it has grown and changed and expanded, and now we help people with all sorts of difficulties. But alcohol is still a constant problem in any work setting. The employee assistance program that I work with is a small regional employee assistance program. We're referred to as an external. And what that means is that companies contract with us to come into their work site. We are not employed by the employer of the employees that we work with. And so they contract with us to provide services. Very often, people, when they think of an EAP, they think of that place I can go to get free counseling, which is true. That's what an EAP provides. But they also provide a lot of other things, including consultation and education for managers and supervisors. And that includes substance abuse information and information on alcoholism and information on how to identify when an employee may be having a problem with alcohol. And so that's a part of the education that we do with managers and supervisors. We also often have people referred to us by their employer when they have performance issues on the job, when they are doing things that are causing difficulties in the workplace, or they're just not getting their work done. Sometimes that's because of their drinking. Sometimes that's the issue. Sometimes we have people who are referred to us because they've been intoxicated on the job. They came into work. And so we are their first contact. Their employer says, you've got to go to the EAP. Very often we're seen as a punishment by those employees. I'm sure that never happened to anybody in this room. But we try to work with that person to help them with understanding their disease and to help them get connected. Sometimes that means referring them to a treatment center and getting them involved in treatment. Sometimes it's about connecting them to AA. We're very fortunate in Asheville, where I live. There's a strong, healthy recovery community in Asheville. And we have a good number of contacts there of people that I can pick up the phone and call and say, you know, this person needs some extra help. This person isn't going to go to a meeting by themselves. I think that's one of the biggest obstacles that I personally see with folks is the idea of going to a meeting where people I know may or may not see me walking into that meeting is just too hard for me. And so having somebody that I can connect them with, that I can say, you know, maybe you can call and talk to this person on the phone, or maybe you can meet them for a cup of coffee, makes a world of difference. It really does help connect that person. We work with, as an external EAP, we work with over 100 employers that range throughout Western North Carolina. For those of you who are familiar with North Carolina, we go all the way from Murphy, which is about as far south as you can get in North Carolina, to the Georgia border, all the way up to Bristol, Virginia, and Tennessee. So we expand the range of the mountains and the western half of the state. We work with about 3,500 lives. Most of those are healthcare. We work with a lot of hospitals. We work with a lot of municipalities. We work with a lot of law enforcement officers and firefighters. We work with a lot of small nonprofits, and we also, because of the tourism industry, we work with a lot of tourism. If you go to Western North Carolina and do anything touristy, we probably work with them. So that kind of gives you a range of the type of employees we're working with. We also work with some factory type jobs, where people are on a factory floor. And so we have a huge range of employees that we see. But there is something that's extra helpful and something that can be really unique and magical about connecting a nurse who's sitting in my office who is about to lose her job or his job and about to lose their license to be able to be a nurse. And that's the only kind of work they've ever done. And they feel as though their life is falling apart. And there is something really beneficial about being able to connect them to a nurse who has been in their shoes, lost their license, gotten their license back, and is working again, and has done that through AA. And there is something that really does make a difference. And so being able to be a witness to that and to be able to see that kind of connection is a really it's a privilege of my job, and it's the days that I go home singing and smiling when I can do things like that. And not every day can I do that. So that's a little bit about my experience. And again, the folks that we work with in AA that we refer to, they're absolutely fabulous. They send us monthly information. They come and meet with our counselors, and just so that we know who they are. Whenever there's a change of the guard of the people who work with professionals, they come and introduce them to us. We really do have a fabulous relationship with them. In part of my preparation for coming here, I did an informal survey of other employee assistance professionals in Western North Carolina. And it was very informal. People just volunteered to take my survey on SurveyMonkey. There were about 37 people who responded. And so you have to think that probably either those 37 people were really interested in AA or they just liked me because they were willing to take the survey and do it. And it was probably a mixture of both of those things. But of those 37 people, about 60% of them said that they had a name and phone number for somebody in AA that they could contact directly, and which was it's a pretty good percentage, I think, 60%. But 70% of them said that they only got information from that person when they contacted them and asked them for information. And so there wasn't a lot of necessarily contact on the side of the people in AA. The other thing that I asked them about were what some of the challenges were in referring to AA. What were some of the things that they had difficulty with in getting somebody to go to AA? And, of course, the number one thing, which probably won't be a surprise to any of you, was denial. The person didn't think they need it. I'm not that bad. I work during the day, so I can't go to those evening meetings. All kinds of ridiculous things. That we tell ourselves. The second thing that they identified was that the professional, the EAP professional, did not feel like they knew enough about the meetings to be able to help somebody choose what meeting to go to. That they didn't feel as though they knew what would be a good match for that person. And their fear is often that if the person goes to a meeting and has a bad experience, trying to get them back to that meeting is really hard. And so they really were felt challenged, and they felt as though they were doing a disservice with the employee because they didn't know enough about the meetings. And the third reason, and I think that this reason might be unique regionally to the Southeast, Eastern United States, but the third reason that came up was that people tell me they don't want to go to AA because it's too religious. And again, I think that that is a misunderstanding on the part of the professional and a misunderstanding on the part of the employee that we're working with. And I'm telling you that not because I understand that AA is not a religious organization by any means. But I think helping people with understanding the spiritual concepts of AA is a real challenge. And I think that it's one of the hurdles that we really need to continue to work on. helping as an employee assistance professional, one of the things I've realized in preparing to come here was we need to help employee assistance professionals about how to have that conversation with somebody and help them with understanding that. But it's also important for you all to help people with understanding that piece, to help people understand what that means. Being in the Southeast, there is a religious fervor in general, and I know I'm stereotyping a little bit, and I apologize if that offends anyone, but the Southeastern United States is known as the Bible Belt. And so those things often come up with a lot of organizations, even not just AA. But being aware of that and being aware that that's even more of a challenge, I think, is something that is going to be, that is something that we need to look at. And we need to figure out how to, again, help people understand the message. Most people outside of AA only understand AA in the context of movies and television shows. I have been fortunate to have opportunities to go to speaker meetings and to go to open meetings and to have an idea of what AA really does mean and to have at least a little more awareness and insight. But most folks don't understand that. When I talk with a human resources professional about AA, they think I mean treatment. And so those are hurdles that we need to continuously be educating people about. We need to help people with understanding. And I don't want to go over my time. I'm okay with time? Okay, good. Some of the things that I also heard from the folks that that I surveyed was, again, the anonymity issue, that I'm concerned about people knowing that I'm going to those meetings. And in a small town, in a small mountain town, that is a real issue. That is something that, again, is something that I think helping people with understanding how it works and the benefits is a really important piece. I know people who drive hours out of their way to go to AA meetings because they don't want to go to the AA meeting in their town. I respect their dedication. They're doing it. They're working the program. They're going. But they're spending hours of their day to do that. You got to want it pretty badly if you're doing that. And so while I greatly respect it, I also would wish for that person that they would become comfortable enough in their recovery that they would be able to walk into a room in their hometown. As I mentioned, we often work with hospitals and we work with municipalities. And so we work with some folks who have very specialized careers. Nurses, law enforcement, firefighters. These are folks that have particular challenges. And I'm not saying that other professions don't have challenges, but when you're a first responder and you're witnessing the type of trauma that those folks are witnessing, it does change your view on the world. And so I really think it's important to be able to connect people who have some kind of commonality, who are in recovery, and be able to help them with meeting somebody who, again, has experienced the same types of things that they have. That is a really vital piece, particularly with law enforcement. We've had a lot of struggles with getting law enforcement officers the help that they need. They are also often at a disadvantage. I've had treatment programs tell me they didn't want law enforcement officers in their program. It can be a huge challenge. Having somebody go to an AA meeting that's full of people they've arrested is a difficult thing. It's a really challenging thing. And so, again, considering those types of things and recognizing that alcoholism does not discriminate against profession, it doesn't discriminate against economics. Everyone needs to have a home group that they feel comfortable with in recovery. And so if there is a way that you can find in your home group to reach out to folks who might need that, to connect people who might have that kind of commonality, that can be a very important thing to look at. And I think that I have come to the end of all of my information, so thank you so much. Again, it's been an honor.
Thank you, Dawn. It's so important for us to hear from the people who are on that side of the fence, making referrals to AA and encouraging clients to be here. And we just appreciate all of your efforts and the time that you took out from your busy life to be here. Thank you. Our next speaker, I have the pleasure of introducing, is David Nesbitt. David has a master's degree in social work and extensive experience in the field of alcoholism. I was privileged for many years to work with David in Alberta, and while he managed a treatment center there, a treatment program specifically designed for referrals from employee assistance professionals. David was involved on a regular basis with Fifth Step volunteers from AA. He is a strong advocate of AA regarding its critical role in the recovery from alcoholism. In his current role as executive pastor of a large congregation, David continues to use his knowledge of and experience with AA. Primarily, though, David is a friend and just a very caring human being who responds where he is needed, and as he has done by agreeing to share his journey with you today. Welcome, David.
Well, it's such a privilege to be here this morning. My watch is still set to Alberta time, so I'm reminding myself it's just 7-something there, not 9-something. And at my age, I seem to feel the ill effects of even little things like that. It's such a privilege to be here in attendance at your 80th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've traveled here from Western Canada to be with you on this very, very special occasion. I've worked in Northern Alberta as a social worker from 1980 until my retirement in 2010. And as a social worker over a 30-year period, I've worked in the areas of child welfare, family violence, and also in the area of addiction. For my last 17 years, I worked for a government agency set up to help Albertans deal with addictions and the problems associated with their alcohol use and the use of drugs, tobacco, and gambling. I was the manager of a treatment center facility, a treatment center located in Grand Prairie, Alberta, and it was a privilege there to work with many fine people. In my work, I would also come in contact and have the opportunity to learn and benefit from the experience, strength, and hope of those who are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. In my early years as a social worker, I would come in contact with people whose lives were in trouble because of their use of alcohol and other substances. I would learn that despite the best intentions and their resolve, their effort, and outcomes that were significant if not severe, the people were helpless to change. I also learned that as a professional, I too was powerless to bring about change on their behalf. At some point, I began to be introduced to people who were on a journey of recovery. I would hear about groups of people meeting in basements of churches and other odd locations. The acronym AA, terms like meetings, sponsors, steps, it was all a bit odd at first, if not mysterious. Well, we fast forward to 1992 when I had the opportunity to go to work for a government agency called ADAC, an acronym for the Alberta Alcohol and Drug Abuse Commission. I went to work in one of their facilities located in Grand Prairie, a northern city in Alberta, Canada. In the early 1990s, I would get to meet AA members, some with over 30 years of sobriety. AA was a very important part of recovery in small, isolated northern communities, and there already existed a very strong relationship between those AA members and the local addiction services. In fact, people of the North, including AA members, had long advocated for an addiction treatment center to serve the people of the North. That dream was realized in 1991 and with the opening of the Northern Addiction Center, a brand new 52-bed, Detox and Residential Treatment Center. And within 3 years of opening that center, this center took on a mandate on behalf of the whole province in developing a specialized program and services dedicated for meeting the needs of the Alberta workplace. Marketing research undertaken at the time, and these were meetings with stakeholders from across Alberta, the process sought out large companies from different sectors and employee assistance professionals and other key occupational health providers. Now, based on their experience, their work with employees in trouble, those who were able to recover and successfully return to the workplace, what was their experience telling them? It was telling them that they wanted a 12-step approach in a treatment program. Initially, my specific role was program development. Again, we looked at those with experience and learned from those programs that were being sought out by workplaces because of their results. We studied the essential elements of these 12-step programs and set about to dedicate space for the creation of the ADAC Business and Industry Clinic, a 12-step program which would be located at the Northern Addiction Center in Grand Prairie. That program was launched in 1994. I would manage this clinic from its inception up until 2010 when I retired. When I managed the clinic, I would spend time each year traveling the province, meeting with individuals, EAP professionals, occupational health specialists, and other HR professionals. And they were making, they would make referrals on behalf of workplaces. They frequently had responsibility for different aspects, things like assessment, referral, aftercare, follow-up, and case management. I learned how our clients were doing, and it further reinforced the value of helping those people to get it and then connect them well to the AA support in their home communities. Last fall, in September of 2014, it was my privilege to be invited back to the 20th anniversary of that clinic that had been opened in 1994. In Alberta, the Business and Industry Clinic has a 20-year history of helping companies respond to employees in trouble. The key to its success has been a commitment to abstinence, a commitment to a 12-step approach, a commitment to linking individuals to AA and other supports that exist in their home communities, and a commitment to understand, identify, and better intervene and treat those in our care. As I've pondered being here today, there are some key highlights that capture my experience and my relationship with the folks in AA. First, I have found that there's such a willingness by AA members to help those in trouble that went above and beyond. It's interesting, Grand Prairie, even by Canadian standards, is a relatively small city. We're just a city of 50,000 people in northern Alberta, and we're not a 50,000 city connected to other cities that are 50,000 and more. We are 50,000 people in the middle of nowhere. The next largest center is Edmonton, and that's 4.5 hours away. And in Grand Prairie, because of the size, we have a relatively small number of AA meetings that occur every week. We do have one a day somewhere in the city, so we're that small. So imagine building a detox and residential treatment center in such a small place, and it really taxes resources, and especially the critical resources of AA. So most of the clients coming to our treatment center were coming from out of town. So one of the attractions about coming to Grand Prairie was you probably wouldn't run into anybody you knew. And so that was a big attraction for places like Edmonton or Calgary or some of the other western provinces. And so they were coming from out of town and would leave Grand Prairie once their treatment was done. Now, despite the challenges and problems that that created for the people in recovery in our city, people, constant newcomers, and people there for such a short period of time. AA members were there to extend themselves. People, everyday, ordinary people coming together with a desire to help others, and they carried the message to those who still suffered. And then, once those clients returned to their home communities, wherever our clients would end up, there were other AA members to pick up the baton and to continue to support that journey of recovery. Those in recovery have such a compelling message of change and hope for something better. Something that is so desperately needed for people in trouble. The treatment center was often about the theory. The AA member was all about the application, where the rubber meets the road. The second thing I thought about was AA assistance wasn't just to alcoholics, but it was also to us at the treatment center. As treatment providers, there's some things we know, but there are many things that we don't know about recovery, or there are only things that we understand secondhand. The people of AA that I encountered were always there to share about their experience with me. The third thing was that there was an impact on us as a treatment center. AA and the 12-step recovery process were not just treatment strategies or techniques. Just as principles needed to take hold of the individual, it also needed to take hold of us as treatment providers and at an agency level. There was a tremendous learning curve for staff and volunteers. Some of these folks had their own addiction and recovery experience, and others, like the Friends of AA, had other kinds of knowledge and experience that was also important to our evolution and change as a treatment provider. The next thing I wanted to comment on was that the principles of AA were not only active in the lives of individuals who were embracing recovery, I also came to believe that they were active in the development of a program. God, active at a micro level, bringing about change in the individual, but he was also involved at a macro level, helping us as an agency. We would face a number of challenges in our growth and development. There were issues and problems that would need to be addressed, and I came to believe that a power greater than us was helping us to develop, respond, and improve as an agency, as a program, in ways that were profound. This is one of those interesting spiritual concepts that's just an opposite. So, it's not in our strength, our knowledge, experience, or insight that we're going to make a difference. But sometimes it's in our weakness and in our ability to sit with uncertainty that God is active and provides a way. So we would see God's wisdom, strength, and provision, again, was made through collective wisdom. I think of the many lives that I saw transformed. There were many examples of alcoholics caught on the job, sent to treatment, who became engaged in the process of recovery and became valuable resources within the companies to help others in trouble. I think of pilots, police officers, nurses, people in the oil patch. Again, just lots of people. On a personal note, I'd like to share this. In my own spiritual journey, I came to value many of the principles and concepts and traditions that I saw alive in the lives of AA members. AA, for me, provided a paradigm shift where I saw issues being worked out in ways that were real, free from judgments, where there was encouragement, strength, and hope. People end up in difficult places. I would end up in a difficult place. The difficult things that we create can be a source of great guilt and shame, and it can also be the beginning of a journey of discovery and recovery. I witnessed how shared weakness would facilitate God's purpose, His strength, and would bring about change. People will sometimes say that the 12 steps, in their talk about the 12 step as a program, as not just being for the alcoholic or the addict or for some other compulsive behavior, but it's a program for living. My problem was not alcohol or drugs, but I did have a problem with living. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for people in recovery because they were an example of owning the problem, seeking, receiving help, and engaging in a process of recovery and change. I look back and recognize how God was active. I was learning the value of a process of recovery, not an event, but a process of recovery. And I learned that recovery took place within community. It was not enough to know what was true and right. Despite knowing, we can end up in all kinds of trouble. In conclusion, I'd like to say AA and its 12 steps had a reputation with the Alberta workplace for getting the job done. We heard that and set about to deliver a 12-step program for the workplace. We've been doing it for 20 years. It had an impact on the lives of clients. It impacted us collectively as a staff and as a center, and it impacted us as individuals. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. You can see why we were so lucky in Alberta to have David as the head of the Business and Industry Clinic. His involvement with AA throughout those years was just second to none in terms of his dedication to working with members to bring the message into the treatment facility. So thanks again, David, for your willingness to be here and share this journey along with some of your personal messages as well. Our final speaker today we are so privileged to have is Adrian G. from Barbados. AA started AA started in Barbados 54 years ago, and Adrian has a very personal story to tell you about that. We discovered this morning that Adrian and I lived within 60 miles of each other in Alberta many years ago. So it's a very small world. Adrian is an executive manager in aviation and in the manufacturing industry, and I was also very pleased to hear that one of the things that he's responsible for manufacturing is solar panels. The green industry is a specific interest that my husband and I have, and we're kind of working in that area trying to protect the environment in the Yukon in Canada. So Adrian is currently self-employed and semi-retired for the second time. He apparently has a little trouble with retirement. He's going to share with us a little bit about, he told me what it was like to be drinking and working at the same time, and also sharing his story about when he changed from needing, from wanting to drink to needing to drink. That was how he expressed part of his journey for me. David had an intervention by his family and by a medical practitioner. And so that's kind of the connection, I think, here, that the professional community was instrumental in David being able to access this amazing program. Did I say David? I'm sorry. Okay, Adrian, I apologize. We're so happy to have you here from Barbados, Adrian. Thank you so much.
Good morning, fellow alcoholics. Good morning. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Adrian, and I'm from and I'm from Barbados. This is really a surprise for me. About 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, another friend from Barbados was saying he had this dilemma of who he's going to listen to speak, or listen to speaking, either a colleague of ours who was speaking at AA in the Caribbean, or you. And I said, me? I'm not speaking. I had no idea to speak. I'm carrying the flag tonight, but I'm not speaking. He says, well, are you Adrian G. from Barbados? I said, yes. I said, there it is. And it's also a surprise to our, to them. These earth people didn't know I was coming either, you know. And that's where Dawn picked up her nomica for earth person. And I want to also say that I was not in AA 54 years ago. But the personal aspect of that is that, and it's a bit vague. It was someone from North America. People talk about the Western provinces. People talk about California. Some people say his name was Carl. But he came to Barbados 54 or so years ago and realized that there wasn't any AA meetings in Barbados. And we invented rum in Barbados, by the way. You know, 300 and some years ago, rum was invented in Barbados. So there's probably one or two alcoholics around. So someone suggested to him that, you know, he'd go and meet the editor of the local newspaper. And he said, I will do that. And that person happened to be my father. And he didn't recognize that he had a problem, so he sent him on to an employee, and that's how AA started in Barbados. My father should have joined. The disease took him. I want to just take a note here to thank my support team, who there they are waving in the back, Andrew and Chris and Anne and Myrna. Because in the afternoon yesterday, I wasn't doing this, and Myrna said, "Just pray on it." And I think I prayed on it. I'm sure, but here I am. I was in the aviation business, and I was in the marketing and sales aspect, so I had an expense account. What wonderful an expense account! You know? No questions asked. Selling very high cost equipment. You know, so not only taking clients out on the expense account, but stocking my bar at home on the expense account. You know, that was, I thought I deserved that, you know. But I would never drink at lunchtime. Nah. Because if I did, I'd be an alcoholic. But I could drink at lunchtime on the weekends, or in the morning on weekends, right? I was a functioning alcoholic, I guess, for many years in the aviation business. I was fortunate enough to travel a lot, so I tend to sit at the front of the airplane, and I would kill a half a bottle of champagne before the wheels were up, you know, and then arrive somewhere and going, where the hell am I? You know, which airport is this? But didn't have a problem. You know, and I didn't see it. And that continued for many years. You know, I was in that business for many years, about 25 years. And then I moved to Alberta. Actually, I went to Tulsa, Oklahoma first, and people thought I was crazy, and I worked in a place called Broken Arrow. It's not pronounced Broken Arrow. It's Broken Arrow. And drinking continued there. I was still in the aviation business. And then I moved to Alberta and actually moved into the furniture business. And that was a really exciting, actually, business. It was we were building consoles for dot-com companies or transportation companies or NASA. I actually went to see a space launch. And that was very nice, but... And it was really interesting because we were the closest human beings to the shuttle launch. But we had to be in there for about 8 to 10 hours without a drink. But I didn't have a problem. No, I didn't see it. Then I got made redundant in Alberta, so I started to work for myself. I had an office in the basement of the homes. All the homes in Canada have basements because if you don't, your house will fall down. You have to go, your foundations have to be under the freeze line, frost line. You know, so I had an office in the basement, and the bar was upstairs. You know, so lunchtime drinking, absolutely. You know, absolutely. So your day ended at, 12, and then 11, and then you would say, well, I don't have to do all that stuff I have planned for the rest of the day. I can do that tomorrow, right? Yeah. It's not really that critical, procrastination. So, my marriage was breaking up, surprisingly. I wasn't interested in anything. I mean, sex life, forget it. Hello. And I had a younger wife, and, because at 9 o'clock, I was snoring. Because I've been drinking since 9 o'clock. I mean, that's a lot of drinking, That's 12 hours of drinking, And she didn't understand that. So anyway, she left. In fact, I left. I got thrown out. and I went back to Barbados. My brother, said, get your backside back to Barbados. You're drinking too much, daddy. I went back to Barbados, and I held it together for a while. And then I joined a local paint company, of all things. And, going from aviation to furniture to paint, all kind of exciting. and the key about making paint and making profit is see how much water you can put in the paint. You don't use much oil paint today, but, it's acrylic or whatever the other term is. But you got to put as much water in there as you can possibly. And your paint still stay on the wall. I was kind of then, sort of heavily drinking, but again in the afternoon. But, if I had a presentation to make, and I know this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but there's other things that you could take to pep you up for that meeting, So you'd have to dash out to the washroom and do something and then come back. I decided then to retire, but not from drinking. And I met this wonderful lady, and she probably drank as much as I did, and still does. The drinking was constant, and I then went back into consulting, and I remember going to a meeting with a client, and I live in a small apartment building, and this was an important meeting. I got to be thinking correctly and stuff, and which is tough for me in normal situations. So I had a couple of drinks, I had to have a drink when I woke up, But talking about going from wanting to drink to needing to drink, I had to have a drink before. But that didn't stay down the first one. You take the second one, one of them is going to stay down. And I'm walking down the steps going to this very important meeting, and I turn around and I go back for another drink. Nobody in here has ever done that, of course. It's cruel, I think David talked about, Grand Prairie being a town of 55,000 people. And I'm going to talk now about anonymity in the workplace. I'm now back out. I'm working again as a consultant. I thought I was going to be doing kind of part-time work, but I'm working for a fellow whose nickname is Busy. And he is busy. I actually put in quite long days. And, keeping anonymity in a small community, in a small workplace, is tough. But does it really matter? Because people knew I was a drunk anyway. Most people knew I was a drunk, you know? So anonymity in the workplace is a tough one, you know? And I think it was David that talked, or it was it Dawn that talked about people who have gone to a treatment center and then go back to where they were before, you know, into the same employer. That must be really tough. And I haven't experienced that, and it'd be interesting, you know, when there's question period or time we have after, someone could maybe talk about that, you know, as to what it was like having to work somewhere and go back. And talking about carrying the message, we in Barbados are small. Group. We have 2 meetings a day, sometimes 3 meetings a day, so we're not in bad shape. But alcoholism isn't accepted in Barbados as a disease, generally speaking. You know, there's a real stigma behind it, you know, because people, men can drink, you know. We invented rum, you know, so if you're an alcoholic, you're weak, you're lost, you know, you're something, you know, you know, they don't accept it as a disease. And it's even worse for ladies, you know. I look around this room and I see almost a 50-50 split, I think, of women and men. In our meetings in Barbados, 10%, you know, 10% maybe. It's a real stigma. And it's something that we're working on, trying to spread the message. And I work with the Public Information Committee, and we're taking the message, you know, we took the message to doctors, and it's surprising how many people in the medical profession don't understand. I was very fortunate to meet a doctor who, by chance, does understand. You know, I tell a little story. Lady friend of mine, you know, was very concerned about my drinking, you know, and she suggested I go and see a psychiatrist. So I did, you know, under duress. And we talked a little bit about drinking. I probably lied about how much I drank, and I did lie about how much I drank. And his suggestion to me was to measure my drinks. So I measured them by the bottle. You know? It's not his fault, you know? So taking the message out, that's what we're trying to do. We do it to the medical profession. We did it to psychiatrists. We did it to schools recently. We're having a tough time getting into correctional facilities. But it is a message out. And as David said, you know, we can help the non-alcoholic as well. You know, I mean, our 12 steps, the way we live, happy, joyous, and free, the energy that Corliss talked about here, and Dawn talked about, the energy, you know, the spontaneous cheering, the happy, joyous, and free. Generally speaking, we are happy, joyous, and free. Perhaps not all the time. You know, life goes on, but at least we deal with it, you know. And I'm blessed to be here. And I am glad, in fact, that I only found out yesterday, because I didn't have to worry about it for 2 weeks or something like this. And I have to write copious amounts of notes. The other thing is that we, I want to talk to Dawn a little bit after. You know, we don't have, as far as I know, an employment assistance program structured in Barbados. So I would probably, this is going to be useful for me. I'm going to exchange cards with her, and then we can correspond after. So, and the other thing was, you know, when I was looking at, this was total shock, because when I came in here, these people are wearing badges with yellow stripes in them. So what's that about? How come I didn't get one, you know? But I'm not Earth person, it has found out. And I had all these initials behind their names, and I was trying to figure out what that meant. You know? You know, but I think it as Corliss is saying, it's probably worked for the best. I don't know who put my name up, because at least I'm able to give the other side of his story of an alcoholic in the workplace, as opposed to professionals helping alcoholics in your workplace. For thanks for being patient, and have a wonderful and blessed day.
Well, Adrian, I just appreciate you sharing that inspiring story of recovery. And, you know, Adrian is such a great example of what I see in AA all the time, and that is a willingness to serve. I have no idea what happened in terms of his invitation to be here this morning, but he got here. And it's so wonderful. And this is something that I see and have experienced throughout the years of working with AA, that you are willing to do whatever is necessary. So, Adrian, thank you so much for being here this morning. We appreciate it more than we can say. Eva S., who is the coordinator of the convention, asked me if there was time to briefly share a little bit of my story with AA. And so I will share part of that with you this morning. The importance of cooperation between the professional community and AA was expressed in Language of the Heart by Bill W. when he said, "More and more, we regard all who labor in the total field of alcoholism as our companions on a march from darkness into light. We see that we can accomplish together what we could never accomplish in separation or rivalry. I'm so grateful for the service that you have provided to my clients and staff and managers when I was responsible for administering detox and treatment programs in the province of Alberta. You assisted us in starting meetings in treatment centers. And you, later on, when we requested information sessions for clients and staff, you drew up a roster and you were there every week, all year long. That's quite a commitment from AA in sometimes very small communities. The Bridging the Gap service has made a tremendous difference in the rate of post-treatment participation in AA, and therefore in long-term sobriety rates. After all, treatment programs are time-limited, while AA is always available to our clients. I realized early in my career that professionals in the addictions field, we could help clients get onto the road to recovery. But AA could walk with our clients down that road every day for the rest of their lives. A recent submission to the Grapevine stated, "Our message to the world is not that we've ceased to drink, but that in ceasing to drink, we've succeeded in living in the world. I want you to know that you have indeed helped me to more happily and successfully live in this world. I'll always be grateful to you for the acceptance and love that you have demonstrated to this non-alcoholic but still suffering human being. I'll always be grateful to you for showing me the way you have, sometimes in desperation, embraced the program courageously to make your lives better. I'll always be grateful to you for sharing your stories and your love. You've helped me to make my life better. More importantly, though, it is true that together, by reaching out to the still suffering alcoholic, we are creating a better world. Thank you for your service." Thank you.